Welcome back to WBOI Presents. I'm Ben Clemmer. This hour, we are presenting the second hour of Issues and Ales discussion. WBOI's Rebecca Green moderated the discussion, and she was joined by a panel of experts to address rural health. Rebecca will introduce the panelists shortly. Please enjoy the show.
I'm Rebecca Green. I'm the news director at WBOI, and I look forward to this discussion here in Roanoke because I'm a rural resident of Northeast Indiana. So I wanted to talk about this particular issue, and I'm really happy with the panelists that we have tonight. I'm going to have each of them introduce themselves just because their resumes are so rich, and I don't want to miss anything. So we're going to start with Doug and work down the line.
All right. Thank you. Great to be here. What a fabulous setting this is. Great topic. But I'm Doug Powers. I'm an attorney at Beckman Lawson Law Firm in Fort Wayne. For the last 23 years, I focused on employee benefits. So in an employment context, that generally means health care, retirement plans, any kind of benefit other than salary, basically. And the Affordable Care Act has been a large part of my viewing screen over the last 8 years.
My name is Dr. Tom Hayhurst. I'll just go by Tom. And I actually grew up in this area. For some reason, even though I had no family members in the medical field, I was interested in biology and tried to think hard about exactly what to do with my interest in biology and the sciences, and woke up at 3 a.m. in the morning and said, I think I really want to try to go to med school. Practiced pulmonary critical care medicine in this community for basically 35 years, but during many of those years, I also worked at least part-time in the Allen County Health Department. I've always been interested in public health. I think it's a great calling for any young people that might be listening, and I've always been interested also in the intersection of government and health. I served on City Council in Fort Wayne for 12 years, and I've also had a few other political experiences along the way. Appreciate the opportunity of being here tonight, and thanks to Rebecca, and thanks for everybody at WBOI for hosting these events.
And my name's Dr. John Walker. I'm a retina specialist here in town, and I must admit this is the first time I've seen more than three people at a healthcare-related event, so kudos and thanks for having come. As a retina specialist, we take care of diseases that blind people, and any obstacles to receiving that care results in people losing vision. And through decades of treating patients, I think almost every day I see people that are struggling or hurt or wounded, dying, because they can't get good access to care, especially in rural situations. And as a result, I became very interested in healthcare reform. And I believe I'm one of the few physicians in the state that's willing to speak on behalf of single payer. It's so frustrating because we have a healthcare system that costs all of us thousands of dollars more than it needs to, and it's not clear that it provides us the care that we really need.
Thank you, gentlemen. We're going to start tonight with our discussion on access to healthcare in rural communities, kind of with some definition of terms. 20% of Americans' non-elderly population, or about 52 million people, are spread out in 2,500 counties in the South and the Midwest. That same size population is crammed into 70 counties in the Northeast. So we're dealing with a country that has very great differences in population density. And with that population density, or lack of it, comes access issues. And today we're going to focus primarily on healthcare. So I want to start, now that we kind of have this definition, let's talk about what we mean when we say healthcare, and when we talk about healthcare versus primary healthcare or specialties and that kind of thing, so we kind of are all on the same page with that. Dr. Hayhurst, how would you define primary versus specialty care?
I would define primary care as being the intersection between an individual who has a perceived health problem, a potential health problem. It could be a physical health problem. It could be a mental health problem. And since the two are always intertwined with one another, it would likely be either both or a concern of that individual that both were present. And the that individual then does need a primary care health source to present to at least start the process of solving the problem diagnosing the problem, whatever it might be.
What would you define as specialty care, Dr. Walker?
Well, I think, you know, as Tom was saying, primary care, they're the Renaissance men and women of the medical profession, and they just amaze me. They're willing to take on all kinds of different things in their offices, and they do a great job. But at some point, the problems can become complicated enough that it needs to be taken to the next level, where you need your cardiologists or pulmonary specialists or ophthalmologists. So the specialty care would be that second or sometimes third or fourth level of more specialized care.
When we talk about access to care, specifically in the healthcare debate in general, we hear everyone has access to healthcare, and then you hear people also saying, no, that's not true. When we talk about access, what are we referring to? Doug, you might maybe want to start with the ACA and kind of the term there when we talk about this access.
Sure. I think before you get in too much into the ACA, which was signed into law on March 23rd, 2010, it helps to kind of get a little perspective about where we were. In the United States at that time, in 2009, the per capita cost for people in the United States for healthcare annually was $7,598. You compare that with other industrialized countries, you know, pick a country, Canada, $4,139. United Kingdom, $3,311. New Zealand, $2,983. Clearly, we have an issue with the cost of healthcare in the country in 2009 before the Affordable Care Act. If you look at the cost of how that affects individual workers, for example, you compare, say, the differences between what was true in 2000 for the period between 2000 and 2010. During that period of time, we had an inflation rate of 27%. Earnings increased 36%, so workers are doing a little better. However, the share that workers paid for their health care premiums rose 114% in that period of time, and premiums for health care rose 147%. So clearly, in my view, when you talk about access, this is not a sustainable model that we had at that time, and the Affordable Care Act was an effort to try in a very comprehensive way to try and, you know, fix it in such a way that we emphasize quality, affordability, and access.
When we look at the statistics, the patient to primary care physician ratio in rural areas is about 39 per 100,000 people, compared to 53 physicians per 100,000 in the urban areas. Anybody that lives in Northeast Indiana knows that if you're going to go see your doctor, you're probably going to come to Fort Wayne. What causes that? Why is it harder to get doctors in the rural areas, primary or specialty, and what do we do about it?
One thing I'd like to say about this area, I mean, we're I think thinking and talking nationally, but also locally, and that is I don't know the details, the detailed data, but I will say I think just looking at the way our two huge healthcare systems are structured, that we are probably doing better than generally is being done throughout the U.S. With essentially every county seat has perhaps a literally competing healthcare delivery systems, primary care docs, nurse practitioners, other primary care individuals available. So I don't think that things are as problematic in this area, but they are still there is a significant problem with regard to access. I do want to mention that I think that the two hospital systems are working hard to try to provide convenient care, but it can never be like it is when you have several hundred thousand people all squeezed into a small geographic area where there's almost naturally going to be a significant number of primary care providers. And we're going to get into this, but the fact that it's just mechanically difficult to get to a primary care source in rural areas has some very negative consequences, which we will be discussing.
Dr. Walker, anything you'd like to add to that?
Well, I think the probably the biggest problem is that we don't have a healthcare system. We've got this incredible patchwork of for-profit and profit and insurance companies and some public pay and some private pay. The Princeton economist, Uwe Reinhardt, makes the comment that he could, if he took a bunch of Princeton undergraduates and got them as drunk as he possibly could, they couldn't come up with a more insane healthcare system than we have.
That's good.
So
that's
every
good.
Other developed country in the world can look at these problems and say, well, let's figure out what we're going to do to solve this. We have to depend on, say, a hospital system that thinks they might make money, and if they don't, because they're on Medicaid, because they don't have any political representation, they don't get care. It's just, it would be so much nicer if we actually had a system.
Doug, can you talk a little bit about the difference between Medicare and Medicaid?
Yes. Those are two statutes that sound a lot alike, but they're actually very different. In essence, Medicare is an age-based federal program for people age 65 or older for medical coverage. It's an entitlement. You pay tax throughout your working life, and if you have enough quarters built up, you get to participate in the Medicare system. Medicare has parts A, B, C, and D. Part A is the hospital care. Part B is the physician provider care. Part C is the HMO version of that, which kind of combines A and B. And then part D is the prescription drug coverage. So basically, it's an entitlement. It's age-based. There's some exceptions if you're disabled. But, you know, you pay your money in. When you get to be retirement age, you get coverage. It's not free, but it's probably less than you would be paying otherwise. Medicare, on the other hand, is...
Doug Powers just said Medicare, but he's about to begin talking about Medicaid.
It's a tax-based healthcare coverage plan primarily for low-income people. And it's a federal-state partnership. It's probably the single biggest program that we have in terms of an entitlement, or not entitlement, but a federal program. The partnership comes both in terms of how the state works with the federal government and also how it's funded. So there is some flexibility from state to state in terms of what I'll call traditional Medicaid, pre-Affordable Care Act. So states could have different entry levels, for example, and the total cost typically was about 60-40, 60% provided by the federal government, 40% by the states. And as I said, states could have their own entry points. So, for example, in Indiana, we were pretty stingy. I think the typical measure is the federal poverty level. And I think in order to qualify for Medicaid as a single individual, you could not make more than 17% of the federal poverty level pre-ACA. With the passage of the Affordable Care Act, then there was what we call the Medicaid expansion, and I can talk a little bit about that. It was a huge expansion of the program that was a part of the Affordable Care Act. So rather than what existed in Indiana, 17%, was your limit, it went nationwide up to 138%. In other words, if you earned 138% or less of the federal poverty level, you could qualify for Medicaid. So it's a huge expansion. And the way it integrated into this highly integrated Affordable Care Act was that the Medicaid expansion was designed to take the very bottom, the lowest income, least able to pay segment of our population, which was about 20-some percent. And then the second tier would be the subsidized level, so people who earn between 100% and 400% of the federal poverty level, they get a declining subsidy according to their income. And then and that covers in total with the Medicaid and the subsidized care, that's about 80% of the population. And the last 20% are those people who earn too much money to qualify for any subsidy. So that's how it was designed. It was a huge expansion. Politically, I guess, if I can just elaborate on that a little bit, you may all recall that on June 28th, 2012, we had the Supreme Court decision that determined that, in fact, the ACA was constitutional.
Wow.
You know, big deal. The afterthought was that the Supreme Court determined that the Medicaid expansion under the ACA was overly coercive. In other words, the way the ACA put it was, you don't have to engage as a state in this Medicaid expansion, but if you don't, we're taking away that 60% that we already give you. You have to understand that the Medicaid traditional program is about between 15 and 20% of every state's budget. It's one of the largest line items. So basically, the way the Supreme Court looked at it is, that's not a choice. That's a gun to the head. So we are going to declare that to be unconstitutional, but we're not going to get rid of it. Rather, we're going to make it voluntary. So what happened immediately was that the states who didn't like Obamacare immediately said, if I can get out of any of it, I'm gonna. And they decided, many states decided not to participate in the Medicaid expansion, and that is still true today. Up until this election, there were still 19 states, all with Republican governors, who had yet to participate in the Medicaid expansion. With this past midterm, there were ballot measures in Idaho, Nebraska, and they all passed. So it kind of put a stark contrast between what the people really wanted, hey, we want some of this money, versus the sort of philosophical opposition that the legislatures in these states had.
Dr. Hayhurst?
Yeah, I'd like to make one other broad satellite view comment, and that is that I agree totally that we need an organized healthcare system, not what is now been sometimes cynically called a healthcare market. Even it's discombobulated enough you can't even call it that. But you know, I'm here in part because of my involvement with a great organization. It's all volunteer driven, multi-county medical outreach clinic in Columbia City, where we see people from who are either uninsured, underinsured from any county in any state. And we know that Matthew 25 is a great system supported heavily by the Lutheran and Parkview healthcare systems in downtown Fort Wayne. There are similar, you know, in Garrett, St. Martin's Healthcare, in Huntington, there's a free health clinic. All of these structures, all of these organizations are supported by and driven by individuals that want to do more to make sure that everybody has at least primary healthcare available, but they are all, I would say, I don't want to insult anybody, but they are patchwork systems that try to plug the leaks in our imperfect system. They don't really don't think, because Matthew 25 is downtown in Fort Wayne, and there are thousands of people going through there, that really solves the problem, as well as a broad-based organized plan would be. Here in this community or in the United States of America.
The conversation will continue on the other side of the break. Stay tuned.